I'm back and better than ever. This is the second episode of the Buzzer Beater Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Stern. Happy to be back at it after a month away. I hope everyone out there listening had an excellent holiday season, got some fun gifts for Christmas, had an enjoyable New Year's, was able to hopefully relax in their time off because that's what it's all about. But we have a lot to get to on today's show. We'll recap bowl season. Utah, a disappointing end to the year in Northwestern against the Holiday Bowl. Just have to talk about what went wrong in that third quarter. It seemed like nothing went the Utes' way as everything unfolded and unraveled in road to defeat there. Justin Herbert, after deciding to stay at Oregon for another year, put on a less than overwhelming performance at the Holiday Bowl, where we'll dissect that and what the future holds for them. Utah State kicked off the Gary Anderson era in style with a big win. We'll talk about the performance there, the future of that program. And then, of course, this couldn't be a show in January if we were not talking some Pac-12 basketball. Utes have an interesting opponent coming up in the Colorado Buffaloes. I'll talk about what makes them so interesting later in the show. They're a team to keep an eye on, and don't underestimate their ability, even after losing star point guard McKinley Wright to an injury. And then, of course, we'll talk about the rest of the Pac-12, who I think is going to win the conference and who has the best long-term holds. All of that more right here, so be sure to stick around. But starting things off, Utah, really, really rough go of it in the Holiday Bowl. See, I think what made it so hard to swallow for Utes fans is that this game went on a very similar trajectory as a lot of Utes games in years past, right? They get off to an early 14-point lead. Defense is playing great, without Chase Hansen, no less. Offense is moving the football up and down the field. Everything looks good, right? Halftime, they're up. But then the third quarter comes around, and everything just unravels. The wheels come off the boat, or the car, whatever any of you folks want to call it. But no matter what, it was just a really ugly go of it. The Utes had 6 total turnovers in the game, 3 of which came in the third quarter. Northwestern capitalized on those turnovers, made the most of the opportunity. They scored 21 points off of them. Just inexcusable meltdown, in my opinion, on a national stage. I mean, look, it's the Holiday Bowl. It's not the Rose Bowl. It's not a playoff game. But still, you want to put your best foot forward to end the season, and Utah failed miserably in doing that. Yes, there's some good things to take away from the game. But look, this is college football, guys. There's no bronze medal. There's no third place trophy right now. They had a tough go of it in the second half, and that's really what led to their demise. They were completely ineffective running the football. 5 for 14 in the game on third down, which, by the way, is something that killed them all season long. 8th in the Pac-12 in third down efficiency. Arguably what cost them the Pac-12 title game and going further. So these are all things that need to be fixed up. Look, I have trouble blaming the defense. By the end, it was very clear that they were gassed, especially the big guys up front on the defensive line. And given that's where Utah wins games a lot of the time, you got to keep those guys fresh once you get to the third and the fourth quarter. And part of that comes with having the offense stay on the field longer. So they failed not just in scoring points, but in keeping their defense fresh. And that's important, believe me. 2 first downs makes a bigger difference than a lot of you think. Looking at this game from an angle that I discussed on the last episode of the Buzzer Beater Podcast, a lot of Utes fans were disappointed that they didn't get a berth in the Holiday Bowl. And I went on record saying, I went on record saying that I think the Holiday Bowl berth was more appropriate for them given the situation, because I felt they had a better chance of competing in that game. That was a statement I stick by. I think they would have had a good shot of beating Iowa State, but who knows? Yes, it's a higher bowl game, but Northwestern was a good matchup for them on a number of different levels. It wasn't just good in the sense that It was a test that could prepare them for the next year, obviously with an above-average quarterback, an explosive offense, defense that has some good defensive backs out in the secondary. Really took over the game in the third quarter, as I talk on that note. But anyway, the Holiday Bowl was a game that fit them better. The Alamo Bowl, I didn't think they would have a very good chance against Iowa State. And even if they beat them, it's not just about wins and losses. That might contradict everything I just said a second ago, but it's also about preparing for next season. And that's a big component of bowls. And this was a way to prepare for next season with a team that's arguably a better version than a lot of these teams that they'll face in the Pac-12 in the Northwestern Wildcats. Very similar to Oregon, kind of similar to USC in the sense, in a couple of senses. Smarter academic school, obviously. Well, not really. But anyway, you get my point. It was a way for them to prepare, and they just struggled on a number of different levels. Couldn't get it done. Couldn't close the game, which has been something that's killed them, not just this season, but the year before. Let's not forget that they had a huge lead at home against the Washington Huskies last season. Or no, on the road, and blew it. That would have allowed them to get into a higher bowl game. It's kind of been deja vu with the Utes the past few years. Yeah, they're a mediocre team. They've had some above-average seasons. I do think Kyle Whittingham has done an outstanding job. I mean, he has really changed the vibe and the culture of that program. I mean, they're in a bowl game pretty much every season now. That's the expectation. That wasn't a couple years ago, excluding the Alex Smith era in Salt Lake City, of course. But still, it's the third down efficiency, the turnovers, which have absolutely destroyed them, cost them the Holiday Bowl, arguably, I think, in my opinion. They just need to clean up these mistakes. They need to have a better, more efficient offense, move the ball more effectively, not turn the ball over, and stay fresh on defense. If they can do those four things, they'll easily find themselves back in the Pac-12 title game next year and potentially winning it, which I think they should have this past year, given the good regular season they had. It's going to be interesting to watch this team going forward because everyone else in the Pac-12 South especially is getting better. Arizona State hired Herm Edwards last year. Colorado hired Mel Tucker. USC assumes to be good in the next year or two once again, returning to form with all those great South Florida recruits. Utah, if they can clean up the mistakes, will be an elite team in the Pac-12 for the next 5 years. Mark my word. But that's a big if at this point. And if they don't, they could find themselves sitting out December play next year. And it could happen. I don't think it will, but it could. Because these are the same minor attention to detail issues that separates the 10-win teams and the 11-win teams with the 5-win teams. It's all about the details. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and ask my main man playing in Tuscaloosa, Nick Saban, even though he lost in the national championship game. One of the biggest storylines throughout college football season was whether Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert would ultimately declare for the draft. Seen as the best draft prospect by many, it's understandably so. This is a very weak quarterback class. Most people thought because of that he would almost certainly declare, especially given how high quarterbacks with a similar stature and skill set were taken last year. Look at Sam Darnold, junior, redshirt sophomore actually, tall, strong, big arm, taken third overall. Josh Allen, same attributes, a little taller, stronger, more of a developmental project. Nonetheless, taken seventh overall by the Buffalo Bills. The point I'm trying to make is that there's a ton of quarterbacks demand in the NFL. Teams are willing to look at these situations when they view a quarterback prospect with rose-colored glasses. I don't think there's any question about that. It's an eye of the beholder type concept, but all you need is two or three teams to fall in love that are willing to trade up and take you high. And then you're a first-round pick. And with Herbert, he was widely considered to be in consideration for the first overall pick, granted with a trade-up. But still, to the surprise of many, he decided to go back to school. Oregon, I don't know what they did to persuade him to come back. They might have put a carrot on a stick and dragged it toward the stadium out in Eugene, pulling him back. I don't know. Maybe they're like that girl he's always had a crush on and dated for a year. Argues with a ton. He couldn't leave them, though. She always lures him back. Maybe that was the dilemma. Because to be honest with you, I think there was more out there for Justin Herbert if he declared for the draft this year. His draft stock right now is probably in an all-time high. And if he comes back next year and looks worse than he did this season, his draft stock could regress massively. Although we didn't really see that happen with Sam Darnold, just look at what's happened in years past with a guy like Matt Barkley. Guy who was considered a first-round pick, decided to go back to USC for a year, and then was taken in the third round. He's now out of the NFL. Excuse me, he actually made a start for the Buffalo Bills this year and remained on their roster from that point on, but was out of football for a large portion of the early season. You get my point. Not really a presence in the NFL anymore after being this highly touted guy out of college. So I think if Herbert struggles next year, he could be in a very similar situation to Barkley a few years ago. And listen, being a quarterback, a starting quarterback in college football is fun, man. You are the big man on campus. You're the guy everyone looks to. Ton of fun, obviously. You get to stay in college, get to be in a college town, get to be the hero. But when making these decisions, you have to consider all the circumstances. And I'm sure Herbert did that. I'm sure he had a list of pros and cons for declaring for the NFL versus staying. But I don't know if he did the best job of considering everything. And I don't know if he made the best advised decision. Especially when considering that the quarterback class next year is so much better than the class this year. I mean, beside Dwayne Haskins and Dan Jones, Herbert was above Haskins and Jones. He was clear-cut favorite to be the first overall pick. But what I'm trying to say is there wasn't much competition behind him. Jones is from Duke. Haskins is from Ohio State, but has more question marks than could fill up a sheet of paper. So he likely wasn't going to be taken in the top 5 or even the top 10 for that matter unless a team A either fell in love or Herbert's stock fell down, you know? He didn't really have that much competition to being the best quarterback this year. Next year, on the other hand, we'll have Jake Fromm from Georgia, Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, and a class that's much better. Those two guys are likely, all things considered, to be first-round picks next year. And I know Kyler Murray just declared for the draft, which complicates things in terms of where Herbert would have been. But in terms of when we're talking about pure quarterbacks, he was easily the best pure quarterback in this year's class, and he definitely is not in next year's class. That in itself gives him a reason to declare this year, which is why I'm scratching my head why he didn't. From a developmental standpoint, I think it was an excellent decision. Logistically and professionally, I don't think it was the right move. Because he could have maximized his potential. He could have started to earn some money in the NFL. Likely as a high draft point pick, earning millions of dollars. Even if he was still developing, which I very much so think he is. But now let me play devil's advocate, because that's the type of guy I am, as I'm sure all of you will find out as you continue to listen to the episodes. I'm going to look at the flip side of the argument here and try to rationalize it. In the Red Box Bowl, Herbert was 19 for 33 passing with 166 yards. Not the best stat line, right? During the season, his completion percentage, 59.4, which is 11th out of 13 eligible Pac-12 quarterbacks. 11th. Now, I know that's not the only thing you consider when looking at a quarterback, but a completion percentage that low is not good in terms of transferring and going to the NFL. Usually doesn't end well. Just look at Josh Allen, 56% completion percentage in college, 52% in the NFL. That's not good when you're trying to efficiently develop, establish a passing game and move the ball down the field. So maybe in this situation, Herbert is thinking, yeah, I could be a first-round pick. But if I'm not ready, I'm going to flame out of the NFL in a few years anyway. Why not stick around in college, enjoy Eugene for another year, get some more coaching, and go to the NFL when I'm more ready. Even if I'm a later pick, even if I don't get as much money initially, you know what? At least I'll be better off in the long term because when I get to the NFL, I'll be more ready. That's where I think Justin Herbert was ultimately at. Because I don't think there's any question that he struggled this year and he likely was not going to be a day one starter in the NFL, even if he was taken in the top 10. He was much more of a project. And then again, we've heard that a lot of times in the NFL when a team drafts a quarterback that a guy is going to sit on the bench, that he's not the starter, he needs to learn, blah, 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 all this coach speak about how he's not ready and this and that, whole song and dance. By midseason, they're already in. Typically before that nowadays. Don't believe me? Take a look at what happened with Baker Mayfield. Tyrod Taylor goes down first half game against the Jets, third game of the season. Baker comes in, lights it up, no turning back. Josh Allen, Nate Peterman struggling. Allen in by game number two. You know, it's the learning curve is so much smaller in the NFL that Herbert might have felt that if he was forced into game action sooner than he was ready, he would just been exposed and there would be no turning back. Because there's a lot less patience in the NFL, believe me, when teams are investing millions of dollars. So from that angle, I understand it. I think maybe he felt that he would be better off overall if he returned another year. And that makes complete sense. If that does end up being the outcome of his decision, if he gets drafted later but is better in the long run, I think it's the right move. If he struggles in the NFL, definitely the wrong move because he didn't maximize his earning potential, and that's a big deal. That's going to be the two different ways that we're going to follow Herbert's career as he enters the pros in the next few years. That's what we're going to look for. Anyway, moving on to the Utah State Aggies playing their bowl game. And they had an excellent showing. Jordan Lake in the New Mexico Bowl. Jordan Lake had 359 yards, 4 touchdowns. Best part, this guy is going to be back. That offense was looking explosive, putting up 52 points on the scoreboard. Felt like watching a Big 12 game in the sense that there was a lot of points scored on one side, but unfortunately the other side couldn't match it as they were able to blow out North Texas. Seth Luttrell led North Texas team at that. Listen, has to be an impressive and reassuring defensive showing for the Aggies. As much as the Utes went into next season on the wrong foot, I think the Aggies went on the right foot. Gary Anderson established a reputation as a defensive-minded coach. Defensive mastermind, as a matter of fact. Utah State has a great defensive showing in the New Mexico Bowl. That could be a sign for things to come. Kind of a foreshadowing in a sense. Like when you watch a movie, show something that kind of gives a hint. I think this could be a team that is very successful for years to come because of the foundation they've built. Explosive passing game, solid defense in the trenches. Great formula for success that could allow Gary Anderson to really reestablish himself in his coaching career. Remember, he's kind of been a forgotten figure the past season. Obviously, he was a head coach at Oregon State, and he was a head coach at Wisconsin in the Big Ten as well, but he kind of regressed at Oregon State, struggled a lot, and then found himself as a position coach and assistant at Utah. So this is a big opportunity for him to get his head coaching career at least back on track. Maybe get another Power 5 shot at things. Who knows? But if he can keep this team on their current path with this formula for success that he's used and become accustomed to for so many years, I envision nothing but good things to come for the Aggies. We've spent so much time talking about the gridiron, but what's really going on right now, January, is action on the hardwood all across the country. Things are starting to heat up in anticipation of March, and Pac-12 basketball, 2 or 3 games into conference play, depending on who you're rooting for, but still, we're about halfway through the regular season at this point. teams are really finding out who they are from an identity standpoint, if they can, if they're legit contenders in their respective conference, or if they're actually just pretenders. One team that I think is a legit contender is the Utah Utes, but they're going to need to do some things to get better overall as a team. I really like how they've played on both ends of the floor so far this season, but I think they need to be a little bit more aggressive on offense, and that starts with the big man, Timmy Allen, down low, who's averaging 9.9, just under 10 points a game. He's smaller, but he's a physical type guy, and I think he needs to do more to get to the paint, try to get some favorable shots inside, because that's how this team is going to make it to March, get a tournament bid. They're riding on getting more physical play, finding ways to score more points, because that's what you need to do to win games in the Pac-12. Listen, playing great defense is a nice thing. Let's not underestimate defense. I think especially in today's NBA, where you see these guys like James Harden playing pickup basketball on an NBA court, we get carried away. We think offense is the only thing that matters. But defense is going to be what gets you the furthest in the game of basketball. I think the Utes are set in that regard, but guys like Timmy Allen, not just Allen, but Donnie Tillman, some of the other bench players, they could start stepping up, playing more of a role on the offensive end of the floor, and this team could all of a sudden be giving Washington a run for their money, or Arizona, one of those two teams. Interesting to see. Perhaps the most interesting team in the Pac-12, though, is the one that Utah is facing up against next, the Colorado Buffaloes. As usual, they're kind of at a mediocrity standstill, so to speak. The Buffs are currently sitting at 16-9. But they were so explosive in the early parts of the season. Remember, there were a lot of young guys on this roster who were expected to take a step forward. Tyler Bay, the former four-star recruit, big man down low. Evan Batty, another former four-star who redshirted last year after a medical emergency. He suffered a stroke. Fantastic story. Anyway, they have a lot of talent on this roster, and it was anticipated that they would be contending for a conference title. Maybe. They had a 6-game winning streak going during the middle portion or earlier portion of the season where they were averaging 86 points a game. 4 or 5 guys were finishing in double figures on a nightly basis. But things have collapsed since then for the Buffs in a big way. They had a rough weekend out in Honolulu in the Diamond Head Classic where they lost 2 out of 3. 2 of those came to Group of 5 schools, Hawaii. So their season has gone downhill. They had a really bad weekend in Arizona, got blown out by Arizona, and then lost to Arizona State the very next night. They beat Washington State recently, but then they lost to Washington after sticking in the game pretty much the entire way. So it's been a rough stretch for the Buffs, and they're a team that's spiraling downhill very quickly right now. Adding insult to injury, they lost their best player in McKinley Wright, who was not just their leading point scorer, but a leader off the court, a guy that people depended on in the locker room. And the injury appears to be serious. After the game, it was revealed that he had been playing through a torn labrum, and he had re-aggravated the injury. I don't know how long this is going to be. I don't know how long he's going to be out. But if this is long-term, it should be a wake-up call for the rest of the team. Other guys need to start stepping up. And if you're head coach Tad Boyle, you need to do a better job coming up with some creative plays on offense, point blank. They're not scoring enough points. They're not finding a way to get to the paint. And most importantly, they're not encouraging their best shooters to shoot the ball, and they're not finding ways to get the ball in their hands. Those two things are the most costly at this point in time. And if this continues the season, not just the season, but the long-term future of the program will very much so be in doubt. They have all the tools to get better. I don't think there's any question about that. Now it's a matter of execution. Fans in college basketball get tired when development happens at a slow rate, especially when looking at all the one-and-dones that happen in today's day and age. So they should, rightfully so, they should be expecting big things out of the Buffs for the remainder of the season. Sharpshooter Tyler Bay to crash the boards, Evan Batty to step up, Lucas Seiwert to return to early season form. Schwartz is a guy who looked outstanding the past two games, but he's been inconsistent, just like everyone else on the roster. This is a team that I think the Utes are going to beat right now, given where they are right now at this point in the season, sitting at just 10-6. But they shouldn't circle this as an easy one. They should come to play. But catching them at this time is perfect for Utah, and they could kind of bury their confidence in a sense with a win, with a defeat, and put the Buffs further down into despair and further on the road to elimination from ultimately reaching a tournament bid. This is the Buffs love to play good defense, which I think is going to make for an interesting contest between the two teams, because Utah also likes to play good defense, and just like the Buffs, the Utes have struggled on offense. So this should be a defensive battle in theory, especially without McKinley Wright. It's going to come down to the Buffs finding ways to score the basketball, which is what they're going to need to do if they want to have success at any point in the later stages of the season. Anyway, just taking a look, kind of a Hawkeye view of the Pac-12 and where everyone's sitting right now, I think the two teams that are best situated for winning the conference are the Washington Huskies and the Arizona Wildcats. Now, similar to their football counterparts, the Huskies grit their teeth on playing excellent defense. They don't really score a lot of points. They're not that type of offense. But man, do they play great defense. They went 2.5 minutes without scoring a basket earlier this season and still won a game by double digits. I mean, how often do you see something like that in any level of basketball nowadays? So that's going to be what gives them the upper hand in terms of winning the conference. Arizona, on the other hand, offensive juggernaut. What else would they be under Sean Miller, right? That's his reputation as a head coach. Brandon Rudolph and Chase Jeter are two of the best offensive players, not just in the Pac-12, but in my opinion, the country as well. These are guys who are really, really good. Jeter's a nice inside piece. Randolph is more of an outside shooter. Right now, I see this conference as a two-horse race between the two sides. One team that I really think was in it until recently was Oregon. And look, they had a big upset loss early on in the season, right? That did happen. They did lose a game to Oregon State. They did lose to UCLA. And this was a team that came out of the gate slow, okay? I don't think there's any doubt about that. They lost to Texas Southern, which was the big upset in their sixth game of the year. And I thought people were saying, oh, well, it'll take them some time to find their form. And everything was okay because they had one star player, Ball Ball. He was the glue, unlike McKinley Wright, who was a very talented player who was leading the team, Ball Ball was what defined the identity of the team. He was averaging over 20 points and 10 boards a game. He was a 7-foot monster out there, a complete ringer in every regard, a man among boys, however you want to put it. But losing him, I think, will hurt their long-term fate greatly. They don't really have a team without him, and they just went from being one of the favorites in the conference to being probably finishing in the bottom quarter, in the bottom four, just because they lost Ball Ball. Same could happen with the Buffs and McKinley, right? But I thought Ball Ball was a world-renowned prospect. He was going to be a one-and-done, most likely. And now you have the dilemma of, will he return? And if he doesn't return, what are you going to do? How are you going to pull in a recruit like that? Because they don't grow on trees, and they're not easy to find either. So I don't know what they're going to do to try to replicate that. Obviously, need a big man, 7'2" guy who can shoot from three. It's remarkable. I don't think I've seen anything like that. But all of a sudden, they're out of contention, and I think, aside from Arizona and Washington, Arizona State, maybe USC has an outside shot. Utah, maybe, if they can play a little bit better. But at this point of the season, at the halfway mark, I think what you're going to see is what you're going to get. In the sense that teams are not are they're going to fluctuate in their performance, right? They're going to have good nights and bad nights. But on average, it won't be that much by that much. You won't see them play amazing and then play horrible. You know what I mean? It'll be somewhere in between more often than not. And that's why I feel comfortable at this stage of the season making my long-term predictions. So Arizona and Washington, I think, are going to fight for the conference with Utah, Arizona State looking on the outside in. Let's do this these last 2 months and see where we end up, right? Pac-12 play the rest of the way, and it'll be exciting to watch, to say the least. Anyway, that's all I have for you on this week's edition of the Buzzer Beater Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm your host, Jack Stern. Be sure to tune in next week, and I'll sign off for now.